Horoscopers Podcast, Episode 13, Brave Review, Part 1, Spoiler Free. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles to choose from. For the listeners of the Rotoscopers podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. So for a free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/therotoscopers. Welcome to the Rotoscopers podcast, a podcast for animation addicts. Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Burt, here with my other host, Chelsea Robson. And yesterday, we got to see a sneak peek, an advanced screening of Disney Pixar's upcoming feature, Brave, which comes out on June 22nd, but we got to see it on June 6th. Full thing, everything completed, ta-da. It was so cool. I loved it.
We know that Pixar has been really pushing this movie, obviously, and so you've been able to see a lot of the trailers that we've had up on the website. We've also had our contest going on for the Art of Brave book that's still going on. You guys still have a chance to go in and check out just by going into iTunes and making and sending a review and sending it to us. So we have been so excited about this movie. Mm-hmm. We've been really excited to be able to see how it turns out, what's going to all of the new advances in technology that they've had. And I'll tell you for sure, I was not disappointed.
Yeah, I had seen a lot of the trailers and the clips and the featurettes, and then I stopped watching them because they were more or less kind of versions of the same thing. And then they started kind of revealing more and more info, which I didn't really want to know. So I stopped watching them. But I felt like, you know, because of the podcast and everything, I'm always looking at the news, I would be like disappointed in this movie because it'd been overhyped in my mind. So I went in like pumped, but not super pumped, which kind of made me nervous because like it's a Pixar movie. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. Like I should be super pumped to go see it. But all those, you know, doubts in my mind were completely done away with when I saw the final feature. It was amazing. It was breathtaking. It was exciting. The story was great. So yeah, I should have gone in super pumped because I left super pumped.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. You know, like one of the things that I loved the most was just you look at all the hair and everything on every person. It's just so like, whoa, I love technology these days. It's amazing.
Yeah, and our friends over at the Pixar podcast, he got invited to go to Emeryville, to the Pixar studios, and he recorded his whole day there, and they had different interviews and kind of show and tell by the different production artists and stuff. And so one of the more recent episodes was all about the hair. And so the girl who was in charge of the hair and design for that, she talked about the hair and how it was like the main focus of the film.
That's crazy.
Getting it right. And they had to kind of revise it a few times, you know, because technology advances every, you know, year, every 2 years. And so by the time they'd finish it up, they'd be working 2 years later, they needed to revise the hair because it was outdated in a way. So it was, yeah, the hair. What I loved about Merida's hair is that it was really bouncy, like a real person with curly hair. It kind of had that flow and that bounce. But at the same time, the way the hair and not just the hair, but the textures for everything, it had this soft painterly feel.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't see every teeny exact strand. Mm-hmm. Like the way that some animation does it is like you need to see every pore, every hair, everything like perfectly realistically, I guess.
Yeah.
But this was more of an artistic version of like curly hair where it was just soft and flowy and you got the general idea and it just felt painterly.
Yeah, it was cool because, you know, if you think about it, the human eye doesn't look at each individual strand of hair. It looks at just the flow of it all in general. And so they did a really good job at capturing all of that with each person of the hair, not just Merida, but like as I watched throughout the whole thing, every person's hair was just like perfect. I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, everybody, that's funny, the first thing we're talking about is the hair in the movie, but the hair really was something that was key to this family because I thought it was hilarious that Merida and her brothers and the dad all have red hair.
Yeah.
And the mom has this brown brunette hair. So obviously the red gene got passed on. Like, they look nothing like the mom. But, you know, the dad's is a bit more coarse and rough. And then he has this grizzly beard. And then the brothers are, you know, baby hair. So it's soft and pretty. And Merida's is completely matured hair and very, you know, she doesn't brush it. And well, I'm sure she brushes it, but it's not like she spends a lot of time styling it and so forth. And then the mom's is completely structured. It's in these braids. It's woven. It's not moving. And there it is. And I really like the mom's hair. I don't think I noticed this in any of the pictures, but she has this big gray streak in the front. And it totally reminds me of Stacey London from What Not to Wear. It's like her signature look is that she's like brunette and has this gray streak. And so I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I love that, like, because you see the mom earlier in the film, and she's obviously a lot younger. Merida's three or four. And then the story progresses, and, oh, okay, you can definitely tell, not only with the wrinkles, but the gray streak in her hair, that she has aged, and so has King Fergus.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So I kind of like these little subtle things that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the gray streak was something that you completely noticed or it was a big deal, but it was just something that they added to the character with obviously everything was perfectly placed in there for a reason.
Right. And then you also had the setting. So the setting is in Old Scotland, and it's just fantastically beautiful. I mean, if you look at any pictures from Scotland, even today, they're just breathtaking. And so they did a really good job at capturing just the magic that is held within all the green and all the architecture and everything. So I really enjoyed that aspect of the film as well.
Yeah, I liked, like, the feel of the film. It kind of had a Beowulf feel to me, kind of a early, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th century feel where, you know, there's these stone castles and then, I don't know, it's just old Dark Ages feel to this film.
Yeah.
It's definitely not like Renaissance sort of thing. And so this is the world they live in. They still kind of live in a wilderness environment. And you get to see that, like you said, with the Scotland and with the Scotland scenery. And it was just really exciting. You know, it was green, but it was brown and it was real. Like I was telling Chelsea earlier, I feel like this was the most real of Pixar's films because there's no toys, there's no cars, there's no overly stylized things. And even though there's a lot of mystical elements to this movie, it feels the most real. Like this could be the most realistic out of any of the films. Do you agree?
I agree. Really, all of this could have happened in real life with a few small exceptions, but it's all pretty much there. And that's something I think helps because you're able to relate to these people because they're just having real problems and in real life.
Yeah, I definitely could see this as a live action movie. No problem. You know, there's certain parts that they could use CGI for, obviously the bear and those things. But for the most part, this could completely transfer over to a live action film and work.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. Chelsea and I, we actually just saw Madagascar 3, and talk about like a juxtaposition of two different types of movies, because Madagascar 3 is so over the top and so unrealistic and unbelievable in everything that happens. I mean, there's this tiger who jumps through hoops, but he jumps through a hoop that's the size of a ring for your finger.
Yeah.
You know, and it's completely normal and no one really like, questions it. Or the animal control lady,
oh my God.
I mean, there's this big chase scene and she's jumping over five different buildings. Then she's doing a backflip here. And then there's an explosion that she starts. And just everything that happens is over the top.
Yeah.
And like, really meant to be, like, this is fantasy.
Oh, yeah. And then you got her. She's, like, running through walls and everything. Yeah. Just like, you're not the Hulk. Like, what is this?
Yeah. So, like, Madagascar 3 is, like, completely just goofy fun. But Brave, on the other hand, is real fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real family. It's real people. So it's definitely very realistic, and that's kind of a breath of fresh air for Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. This film, it was different than any of the Pixar films I'd seen. Like, it felt Pixar, but it was just different. It was just,
yeah,
very well done.
There were a lot of things in there that I was not expecting to see in a Pixar film.
Oh my gosh, yes! Oh, I can't wait to talk about those. Yeah, it makes you think, like, oh, okay, you know, we were talking about, oh, like, people are going to be offended by this, or, oh, that's not for kids. And there were just lots of things that you're like, did they just do that?
They really just did that. Oh, wow.
And I liked it because it's like, okay, we know how we're having fun. Kids, you know, kids aren't going to be, grow up to be whack jobs and demented because they see this, like, one scene. Like, it's funny. And, like, you look back at the old Disney cartoons and, you know, they get away with a lot more stuff. And everyone grew up fine. Like, it wasn't a big deal.
We all grew up okay.
But, yeah, so there's lots of scenes like that, which we'll talk about in part two, that really are amazing, hilarious, just like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely spoils, so we're not going to spoil you on those, but
I want to.
Yeah, I know, right?
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Oh, man. But some of the greatest characters I loved, you'll be able to see in some of the trailers how they bring in all of these different clans from around mm-hmm. the kingdom. And you just get to really like the different leaders of the different clans.
Yeah.
That's something they did a good job with, the different lords of everyone. And their sons were hilarious. And you can see those. And when you go and you look at the featurette for when they're doing all of the
prize.
Yeah, when they're doing the archery part,
mm-hmm.
they, like, kind of show each one of these sons as they're, like, doing their thing. And they just they're really funny. You'll really become a fan of these characters.
Which of the three lords was your favorite?
I think my favorite was Macintosh, the one, he's the really skinny one with the blue paint all over him.
Very Braveheart.
Yeah, very Braveheart-esque. And he was really funny, and his son was just kind of, he was just like, he's kind of a little bit pompous, but just takes after his dad.
Yeah, like the hot guy in school knows it and, like, flips his hair.
Flowing locks.
And the girls in the background during it are, like, screaming, and it's very, like, in Hercules, you know, I got his sweatband! Yeah, with the fangirls going out. So he's obviously, you know, the more desirable of the suitors. Man, I really like Lord Dingwall. He's the old guy with the triple chin and mustache. I guess they all have mustache. Well, mustaches are a prevalent part of this
gray
film.
Gray hair.
He's just an old kooky guy. Just going on senile, like, doesn't care what people think. And he's hilarious.
His son's a really skinny one.
Okay, so, like, in the movie, the parents, you know, they get invited to compete for Merida's hand. And I don't think that's a spoiler.
No.
But they get invited to shoot for Merida's hand. And Merida doesn't know about this. And she finds about this. And she's really upset. And so anyways, they're presenting their sons to the royal family, and it's just hilarious because every single one of them are creating these tall tales. Like, you don't know if they're true or not.
Yeah.
But definitely when they get to Lord Dingwall and then they say what his son has done, like this one guy with his pinky and his bare arm and all these things. And then you look at the son, he's like picking his nose and he's like complete... maybe it happened, but he is completely useless and kind of a moron. I hate to say that, but that's like kind of how he came off. Just aloof.
Yeah.
Very, very aloof. The dad doesn't get it.
They kind of all are, though.
Yeah, they all have their own idiosyncrasies that make them
like weird.
And you understand why Merida wouldn't really want to
be excited.
Yeah. There is one guy who's like a clan bodyguard, and he is hubba hubba. He's like the Kronk.
Yes, he totally reminds me of Kronk. He's so funny.
Yeah, I'm like, man, can he shoot first? Man, I'm okay with that.
And she, like, even gets a little bit excited, too. Like, not so much excited, but just like, really? It's this guy? Like, oh, and then, oh, man. Yeah, that's in one of the trailers, too, so it's not a spoiler.
So, yeah, the lords were actually really funny. I wasn't quite sure if I would like them or how much you would get to know them, but they're actually pretty integral in the story. They stay there for a while, and they're involved mostly with the king. The king is there to entertain them, you know, because for these old kingdoms, they would come and they would stay for months and months and months, and then they would leave. You know, you got nothing better to do, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, these three clans, they come and they hang out, and the king is kind of set to entertain them for the most part. And it's completely savage, and they're barbarians, like true Vikings. It's so good.
It's so funny. I want to quote this thing so much.
You can do the one quote.
Okay. There's this one part where they start going on a quest, and one of the lords, he just starts to like, oh, here we go. Another hunt through the castle. And it's like, how often do they do these?
Yeah, they've been there how long? It's another hunt? Like, it was just a really funny moment. Like, we were laughing pretty hard at that part.
Yeah.
So, how do you feel about the triplets?
I love the triplets. I thought they were funny. I mean, at the very beginning, I thought they were just kind of, they're just kind of there just for comedic mm-hmm. relief. They don't mm-hmm. talk through the whole thing.
Mm-mm.
And so they're just kind of these little hooligans that are just running amok throughout the whole thing. But I think they play a good part. And they add a lot of the background humor to different little things. So it doesn't keep things quite so dramatic. Because mm-hmm. the story itself has a tendency or has... It could go pretty dramatic because of just the setting. Mm-hmm. But you add enough of these little quirky things around it that it livens it up just a little bit more.
Yeah, I was nervous from the trailers because they kind of show their crazy antics, you know, trying to get food and stealing and mm-hmm. causing chaos all over the place. I was kind of nervous that this would be too gaggy mm-hmm. and quirky and the comedy wouldn't really work in the film. Like, obviously, I knew it was going to work, but I'm like, man, like, really, they had to go that route. But I was pleasantly surprised. It's not too over the top, the humor, but it's just enough.
Yeah.
To make it work and to kind of ease some of, like, the tension for all the other super dramatic scenes. And so they played the balance really well. But, but going back to the triplets, Hamish, Hubert, and Harris, the funny thing about them is they're mentioned and you know their names, but they're indistinguishable.
Mm-hmm.
They look exactly the same. They're replicas of each other. So you don't know who's who. They're just a unit. Mm-hmm. together, and they work together.
They run amok together.
Yes, and I actually really like them. They have a pretty good relationship with their sister, and that's obvious, and she really loves them, and the father loves them, but, like, at the same time, they're given this free reign through the castle.
Yeah.
Like, the mom is so on top of Merida, and, like, all over her, but she's kind of on the kids, but really not so much.
She's just like, eh, whatever.
Like, Merida walks into a room, and the brothers are just there, like, you know, doing all these crazy things, and it's like, does no one care about them? Shouldn't we be concerned about the toddlers?
Yeah. these little things running amok. And they have all these secret passageways that they've built throughout the entire kingdom, and it's like, you're four. Like, if that, how did you do that?
Yeah, and the good thing about this, like I said, their relationship with Merida, they're very loyal to Merida.
Yeah.
Like, this family is a very strong family,
mm-hmm.
even though there is major relationship struggles between Merida and Queen Eleanor. Mm-hmm. And I think those two relationships, that one relationship between Merida and Eleanor, is the driving force behind the film for the entire time.
Yes. And I was telling Morgan about how, and we've talked about this on other podcasts, about how when Pixar started out, they didn't want to do any stories that had to do based around a romantic guy meets girl love.
Marriage at the end.
Right, right. I really love how they do a fantastic job of showing all of these other relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times it's friendship, and this one, it has the driving force of a mother-daughter relationship. And especially in those heated years of teenagers, you know, tempers are high and everything. So they did a fantastic job of showing you that side, as well as building that bond and trust. And kind of makes you go back into your own relationship with your own parents. Like, you're just like, man, how am I doing? Am I doing good on this? I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, there's one part where Meredith is in the forest. She just kind of run away and she's upset. And I can see a lot of people relating to Meredith. In this, like, a lot of teenage girls or teenage, you know, guys or people who'd been a teen at one point.
Right.
I could see them relating, like, man, I had that exact same relationship with my mom. Like, I personally don't think I had a relationship like that with my parents, but I can see others how that is a very common vein in a lot of, like, growing up adolescent years. Mm-hmm. So it's a good plot line and it's a good story because I don't think we'd seen it before in any other animated film. Like, I'm trying to think, has there been any other film where they focus on the mother-daughter relationship?
Not really. I mean, the closest I can think of is The Little Mermaid with mother... or father.
They're always the father, dad. Daughter.
Yeah.
Like, the moms in especially Disney movies are absent a lot in animated movies.
Either that or the dads, or, you know, one of them's absent. But I loved how, you know, both of them are there and very much together, very much a couple and in love. So
Yeah, that was actually kind of, like, refreshing that, you know, like we mentioned, like, oh, yeah, it's just, like, an easy way to get a point across, like, the single parent syndrome, you know? Like, oh, I already understand everything that's going along with a single parent and what's, like, this family's life is like. But, you know, to see a nice, happy, structured family that obviously still has individual problems.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of them are flawed in some way, but it was cool to kind of see that, and it was good. So I liked that Merida was extremely flawed, and the mom. Mm-hmm. Like, at the very beginning, like, you can't really side with one or the other. At least I couldn't. I saw the mom's point, and I saw Merida's point, and they weren't going to give, and they are really headstrong. You can see where they get who they're from. They're very much similar but different. And so I really like that because I didn't like Merida at the beginning. Like, I kept thinking in my head, I'm like, she is such a brat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's good because, you know, you learn to respect the changes that come on later in the film for a lot of the characters as it progresses. So one thing, I was going back and I was listening to some old podcast episodes, and in episode one, when we did our 2012 year preview, I'd mentioned, like, oh, Brave, we're really excited for it. It's going to be really cool. To me, this looks like the Scottish Mulan. Okay, I take that back. This has nothing to do with Scottish Mulan. Like, you know, it made it seem like from some of the earlier trailers that she's just headstrong. She runs away and she kind of, you know, changes her fate in a way. But this is completely different. So I take all that back. It's nothing like a Mulan story at all.
No, I wouldn't say Mulan. But there are other movies that we would compare it to.
Yeah. And so that's one thing that I don't know if I necessarily disliked about the film is that it was an original Pixar story. But I'd seen elements of this story in lots of places before. Like, there was this section that I'd seen, and this, and this, and this, and I'd seen lots of movies in this setting. So, like, it wasn't completely original to me. And in our part two, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about how we feel about that. But at the same time, they did a really great job portraying the story they wanted to in their own way.
Yeah, I'll agree with that for sure.
I kind of felt like they took a particular animated Disney movie, which I'm not going to mention, and, like, all right, we're going to put that one under the rug, and we're going to revise that one. Because that one had a good idea.
Yeah, it had it's true. Like, let's pretend that one didn't happen, because nobody really liked it that much. And, but, you know, Disneyland has its own little area. They might...
I can't say that. But they'll figure out what we're talking about.
I know, but...
Whatever.
Like, but still, like, this particular movie that we're talking about... wasn't extremely popular. I didn't particularly like it all that much, but they took that idea and made it perfect. Mm-hmm, I was like, good job.
Yeah.
Finally did it right.
Yeah.
one of the first parts of the movie, she's explaining her life and how she has this to do and this to do and this to do. But then there's those days where she can just go out and she has nothing planned and she can just do whatever she wants. And she's like climbing up this ridge. Like, this is in the first like 5 minutes of the film. So I feel okay with telling you that. So she's like climbing up this ridge. And while she's climbing up, they have some really cool like Celtic music in the background. And I just love the music and the score that they put with this. It was very indicative of the time and place. And it just kind of like pulls the whole thing together. It just creates a very lively atmosphere that just makes you just want to get up and start, you know, doing Lord of the Dance. But they did a fantastic job. I loved it. So if you're anything like me, you'll enjoy the music as well. All of the singing songs on this soundtrack were actually done by the Scottish Gaelic Celtic singer Julie Fowlis with a collaboration with the Grammy-winning band Mumford & Sons. And I just loved it.
Yeah, so
I'd probably buy this album.
The two songs kind of bookend the film. So there's one at the beginning, there's one at the end. And I think we knew that there were two songs that had singing in it. And, you know, they're very kind of catchy, upbeat songs, like most Celtic songs are. There's
right.
kind of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, like a jig in a way. But what I liked about it is that, you know, even though the words weren't really recognizable because they were Gaelic lyrics, they still were memorable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be able to sing this one when I'm at Disneyland with my friends, like having a Disney sing-off. But at the same time, it was different in a way.
Yeah.
Which I really liked. So the score was done by Oscar-nominated composer Patrick Doyle. He's known for Sense and Sensibility and also Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. So his, definitely Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire is very dark score. And this film, it's a very real score. It's very Scottish and it definitely envelops you in that world. And I tried to sit back, you know, I'm not one when I'm watching a movie to notice the score. Like the score is just sort of there and it's great and it's better than having no sound.
Well, it's not supposed to be something that you like are paying attention to. It's supposed to draw you more into the mm-hmm. film and not like think, oh, what is that playing over there? I don't understand.
So there was a certain points in the movie where I sat back and I was like, film critics pay attention to these things. So let's listen to the score right now and how you like it. So I was just listening to it and I really enjoyed the score and I liked the, you know, Celtic beats that it had and it was just a good score.
Yeah.
So
pot of beans. Good job.
What'd you say?
Parabéns means congratulations in Portuguese.
I was like, his name's not Parabéns.
No, I, you know, every once in a while Portuguese just comes out.
So talking about the directors real quick, I just think it's kind of interesting to point this out. Brenda Chapman is one of the directors along with Mark Andrews. And this is Brenda Chapman's child, this story. You know,
yeah.
If you look at her, she has red hair. I don't know if she has Scottish roots or not, but I wouldn't put it past her. And this idea and concept for this story comes from her and her own personal relationships that she's had. And so it really means a lot to her. But eventually what happened is there came a point during production where the story just wasn't working and they had hit a dead end. So they released her as director and they brought in Mark Andrews. And so he had a pair of fresh eyes. He was able to look at it, see what worked, see what wasn't working, and then, you know where to go from there. And I'm grateful for it because the movie is really, really good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really sad because Brenda Chapman, I mean, I've looked for interviews for her. You know, this is press season, 2 weeks before the movie's coming out. I mean, this is the time when there's just interview after interview after mm-hmm. interview, and there's not much for her. And it's sad because she's very integral to the beginnings of this movie, and Mark Andrews is towards how the finishing, how it all completed. And I tweeted her about it. I was like, hey, are you doing any interviews for the film? She tweeted back. She's like, yeah, only if they are Pixar approved. So maybe you can reach out to them. And it was really sad because it made me feel like every single question, first off, she's not doing that many.
Right.
And every single question has to be approved by Pixar. So she can't say anything bad about the film or the process she got kicked off. It was just like kind of a bummer moment. Like, oh.
They won't let her out.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, it's her film too.
Yeah. But. Oh, man. That's too bad about Brenda Chapman. But I think that they will start having more things with her. I hope so, at least. Even just a little bit of the beginnings and how it started and just mm-hmm. her thoughts on the whole thing. I would like to see an interview with the two directors together. Like,
yeah.
You know, the start and the finished product, how they came and what were some of the cool stories and how they were able to move things from point A to point B.
Yeah, really open and candid. I mean, I don't know if there's a lot of tension between the two, but I know that Brenda Chapman's still with Pixar.
Right.
And she's working on other films. But I mean, I understand why they had to do this, because this is Pixar's longest film in development. It's been around since 2004, 2005, at least the concept of it. And so
that's like 6 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of money going on here where, I mean, if it's not working, we can't just keep beating a dead horse. They had to move on and they had to finish the movie, because every day that you're in, you know, sitting in this pipeline, it's money, money, money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just that about them. So maybe we'll see her on a featurette or something, but we'll see.
I hope so.
One thing about this movie I really enjoyed is, if you've listened to the Rotoscopers, we love to quote.
Oh, yeah.
Quotes are our thing. You know, we randomly just insert quotes anywhere. But this movie was very, very, very quotable, which I loved, because I was sitting there and I was thinking, ooh, that's a good line. Ooh, I'm gonna say that. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
You know, like, I wish I had brought like a notepad just to like write some of these things down, because they're great. I loved some of the lines, you know, quick little one-liners from different characters that really made you just like, hey, you're funny.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So that's a good thing, because I mean, we've grown up with the Disney classics and animated movies. So, I mean, we know these movies front and back, you know, and can quote the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, but I definitely, it was funny, because as I was watching this movie, I definitely thought, I definitely could see myself quoting this movie. This is a good one. Because I think recently a lot of animated films I've seen, it's like, oh, that's great, those are good, but I don't have any lines out of that movie that I really want to put in my arsenal.
Yeah. Madagascar 3 did have one line that I will keep around. But, you know, there's other things it's like, meh, I can do without you. But yeah, so many of these movies are so integral to our growing up. It's like, so every part of our lives, we can just like, I'll take you, I can use you. Mm-hmm. They just come so naturally. After we walk out of any of these previews, they always ask you, like, so what did you think? Do you have a quote or anything? And of course, Morgan's right there. I have a quote. Yes. So, what was your quote?
I was like, okay, so how do you feel about this movie? And I say, definitely the best animated film I've seen of 2012, and I've seen them all.
Right.
Which is true. I think this is the best animated film of the year so far, even better than Wreck-It Ralph. On the Rotoscopers Twitter, I kind of put a little thing real quick, like rating the movies that I had seen this year. So this is how it goes. It's Brave, followed by Pirate Band of Misfits, followed by The Secret World of Arrietty, followed by The Lorax, and lastly, Madagascar 3. Well, even though I thought Madagascar 3 was quite pleasant and enjoyable and better than the other two combined.
Right, yeah.
It's still on the bottom of the barrel for all the other animated showings. And yeah. The fact that it's a 3, I mean, just come on. It took them 3 chances to get it right. But
Where would you put Wreck-It Ralph in that?
Well, like, because we saw, like, a, you know, an incomplete right. version of it. Like, I'm not entirely wanting to put it, but I would put it somewhere between The Lorax and Secret World of Arrietty, mm-hmm. or maybe just a little higher. But, so it's kind of middle of the ground. Like, it's really good. I mean, all these movies I enjoy.
Right.
So it's not like the bottom is an F. It's more like a C, you know? So
right.
it's good. But, yeah, I'm just going to have to wait until the final to see if it bumps up or down, which would be horrible, but...
I think it would. No, I have my faith in Wreck-It Ralph. It'll be great.
So I really liked Brave. I thought it was fun and exciting. You know, like we said, and kind of seen plot points of this before,
mm-hmm.
which was okay, you know, because they did it in a new, fresh way. It's definitely a different movie for Pixar with, you know, the scenery and the stories and the characters. And I liked it. It was really good. And I left really excited and I left smiling and like really happy that I was able to see the film. And excited for everyone else to get to see the film, too. Because I leave the films and I'm like, oh, I'm not even going to tell anyone I saw that one. But this one, it was like, okay, well, I'm going to take this person, I'm going to tell my parents.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't really go to that many animated movies. But if I tell them really good ones, they'll take it into consideration. And yeah, so this one, I'm like, I want to go back. So I can't wait for on the 22nd when it comes out to go back again. So I think that's a big indicator about this movie, about how good it is, that it has that instant replay value where I'm like, I need to see this again.
Yeah, for sure. And something I really enjoyed about it, I love the style of all the animation. I mean, I love the face shapes. I love everything that they did about each one of these different people. It really helped to see how far animation has come over the last couple of years. And I was really, really pumped and really excited, and it did not disappoint me. I definitely will tell my friends, and, you know, when it comes out again, I'll probably go, I'll take Marissa, and we'll head on out there and see it again. So, like Morgan said, just that the replay value is just really good on this one. So, we're excited for all of you guys to be able to see it as well.
So, oh, speaking real fast, you know how you mentioned face shapes, how you really like the face shapes of the characters? Reminds me of Meredith's face shape, because her face is very round.
Yeah.
And you know, like, not chubby, but it's just a rounder face.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, because I can totally see, for the princess official lineup, some of their designs kind of get changed a little bit along the way.
You look at Snow White, and she's like, you don't quite look the same as a 40s actress.
Yeah, you don't look 11 anymore.
No,
You know, she's developed boobs and, you know, then her face kind of has been, like, chiseled a little bit. So
yeah.
I can totally see them doing that to Merida, unfortunately, to make her fit into the princess lineup a little better. I hope not, because it's actually like a breath of fresh air to see this different, you know, face shape rather than, like, perfectly angled cheekbones and whatever.
Do you think that Disney would actually put her in with the princesses?
How could they not?
Because it's a Pixar thing. I mean, even though Disney Pixar is together now, but do you, I mean, I
see them in, yeah, I don't know if she already is a part of the official lineup, but that's definitely, I mean, Disney is known for princesses. Like, if you say, what are five things in, to describe Disney?
Yeah.
And princess will come up. And so I see it's just an easy opportunity for them to sell more products and to put her face on everything. And, hey, you know, there's this other redheaded princess, you know, and she has curly hair, guys, and we don't have any curly hair princesses.
True.
So, I mean, it's just more kind of diverse to add to the lineup. But, yeah, so I'm going to, like, keep my eye out to see if Merida's, like, on her official packaging and stuff, if sort of she slowly over, you know, loses weight over the next few years. But let's see.
Well, she's, like, totally skinny anyway, but
how old?
The face.
Yeah, she's, yeah, totally. How old did you think Merida was?
I don't know. I'm guessing, like, 15, 16.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, they're setting her up to be married.
Right, so, but in that time period, it definitely wasn't the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at every other Disney, and it's like, I'm 16 years old, I'm not a child. Like, married at 16, come on now.
For my 16th birthday.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm like, kind of torn about how old. I would think I would place her at 16. I don't think they mention it just for that reason.
Yeah.
But I don't see her being older than Rapunzel. I see her more in, like, Little Mermaid, Ariel age, but we'll see. I need to look that up, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, you also have the whole thing, like, her angst was just like, I'm not ready.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not ready to get married.
I'm a sophomore.
Oh. Ouch.
Yeah. Okay, so if I were to rate this, I am going to give it 4.5 stars out of 5. I think it's splendidly done. It's very well executed. I like the voice talent, surprisingly, because I was kind of nervous about the Scottish accents when I was listening to the trailers.
Oh, yeah?
Like, oh, no, Merida's really going to bother me with her Scottish accent. And
I love Scottish accents.
But, like,
great.
They totally, you know, along with the music and the score and everything, it brings you into the world, and it gives it this unique charm. So I love the accents. I love the animation. It's beautiful. The story is very well done and concise. And I like it. I like it a lot. I love the characters. So I'm giving this 4.5 stars. But I don't know. I think I need a bit more time to absorb this movie to see if it really holds 4.5 stars, the test of time.
Yeah, I think that happens with me, too. Every time I go into a movie, I'll, like, see it, and I'm like, I think I'll place it around, like, right about here. But, you know, you look at every other movie that we've done a review on, and it's all been movies that have been out for 7, 10, 20 50 years, you know, some things that we've just seen over and over and over. So you're not, so you know where they stand in your mind. I think this one, just because we saw it the one time, it's like, I'm still going to place it right. I'm going to give it a 4-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
But that could go up over time.
All right.
I don't think it'll go down. It's at least 4. But I think it could go up after I've seen it a couple more, 5 times.
Okay. Perfect. So, La Luna. We didn't get to talk about that.
Oh, yes, La Luna.
So La Luna is the short that plays before Pixar.
it's a short that plays before the film Brave. And we've talked about this a bunch on other episodes because it was in the lineup for to get the Oscar and everything. And so it's been out for a while, at least a year or so. And so people have seen it. I've never seen it. Mason saw it.
Yeah.
And so he didn't want to give away the twist for it. And I'm just going to say, I loved it. It was really cute.
Yeah. If I'm going to describe this film in one word, it would be tender.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I'll go with that.
Like the character designs, they're very kind of precious moment-esque.
Yes.
You know, like those big eyes, at least for the little boy. And it just has this cute story the whole time. Like, it's jolly and you laugh and there's funny moments, but it's heartwarming at the same time. It's just really well done all around. And personally, okay, seeing the stills and some of the, like, there was a mini trailer about it. Mason had said, oh, this little boy, he finds out the secret of the family business. Mm-hmm. And based on what I had seen, I thought the family business was, you know, you see them in a boat and then you see another picture of him with a star. And I thought the family fished for stars. But that's not a spoiler in any way, because that's clearly not what happens with this family. That's not what happens at all.
Yeah, I was very surprised. They did a really good job at, like, the whole twist at the end of... you know, what their job actually is, was mm-hmm. like, that's so cute.
Yeah, because they're in the dark until the very end. Like, yeah. It's never fully explained. You're like, okay, I'm just going to roll with this. And then the very end, you're like, I think everyone went, aww. So, yeah.
I loved it. I was really happy with the pairing with La Luna and with Brave, because you look at La Luna and it basically shows the relationships of, like, grandfather to father to son. So it's like this multi-generational thing. And then with the characters and everything in Brave, it was very much based around the parent-child relationship as well. And so it was a really good pairing, the two of these together.
Yeah, so okay, so that is our review of Brave and a mini of La Luna. This is part one, spoiler-free. Come two, 3 weeks when Brave actually comes out on June 22nd. We will post another review with Mason, hopefully, if he gets around to seeing it. He will see this, Mason. Talking to you.
Oh, he already hates us, Morgan. You know.
But then we'll do another review, part two. It's going to contain lots of spoilers, so don't listen to that one if you don't want to be spoiled, you hadn't seen it. But that way we can go a lot more in-depth about, you know, specifics that we liked about it, and yeah. quotes, and characters, and scenes, and
theories,
plot points.
And
yeah, exactly. So it won't be, like, a true main discussion. We'll save that for, like, a year after it's come on DVD. We can analyze it a little bit more. But it will be, like, just a spoilery review.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, comments, or your own review of this movie, Brave, or any other movie that you've seen that you'd like us to cover as well, send us an email over at therotoscopers@gmail.com. You can check us out anywhere else on the web. We've got Tumblr, we've got Twitter, we've got Facebook. Check us out anywhere and be able to get more updates on the everyday news of the animation world. Our website is, once again, www.therotoscopers.com. And once again, head on over to iTunes and enter in to win the Art of Brave book. I know we've got a bunch of reviews coming in, and we want you to be able to be part of this drawing. So head on over there and tell us what you think.
Yep, you have till June 30th to do your review of our podcast. Take a screenshot, email it to us, and you're submitted. There's only about 10 entries, so come on. Why not? Why not?
Exactly.
All right, until next episode,
we are the Rotoscopers. Thing. It's very good when you learn to always stay to the end of the podcast. But not just the end of the podcast. Always stay to the end of the movies, too. Brave. Stay to the end of the movie. Okay, bye.